Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 192 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing great. Yeah. Thank you very much. You and I have a lot of things going on kind of in the hopper that we just talked about on our weekly Patreon episode. A lot of people are buying the TCAT face masks.
Yeah.
Showing them off on social media, which is awesome.
That's cool.
I think people are liking them.
Yeah, I think so.
We've also been talking about doing some new t-shirts.
Yeah.
With a separate company, different design. So kind of stay tuned for that. Obviously, once that website's up and running, we'll let everybody know.
Yeah, should be good.
But they'll be much different than what we offer now.
Yeah.
We've kind of been working with the designers, less logo-y and more scripty, if that makes sense, with some nice colors and kind of script wording, different sayings.
Keep your own time ticking?
Yeah, things like that.
Yeah.
I think people might enjoy.
Good.
All right, Gibbs, let's give our new Patreon supporter shout-outs.
All right.
We had Terry Adams.
Hey, Terry.
Rebecca Maple.
What's going on, Rebecca?
Todd Jonas jumped out at our highest level.
Hey, Jonas Brothers.
Chrissy A.
Hey, Chrissy.
Don Montoya Mason jumped out at our highest level.
Montoya Mason.
Ben Smith.
Hey, Ben.
Tyler Jackson.
What's going on, Tyler?
Ann Morton.
Hey, thanks, Ann.
April Moore Robertson.
Hey, appreciate April.
Victoria Severinsky.
Severinsky.
Meredith Undercoffer.
Hey, Meredith.
Missy Granger.
What's going on, Missy?
And then we had a whole bunch of people jump out to our highest level. We had David Holm.
Thanks, David.
Allie.
Thanks, Allie.
Kimberly Harless.
Hey, Kimberly.
And Jennifer Vaughn.
Wow, thanks, Jennifer.
So we had Kellyanne.
Hi, Kelly.
Then Courtney Monroe jumped out to our highest level.
What's going on, Courtney?
We had Nadine Azubko.
Hey, Azubko.
And then last but not least, Christina Mercenides jumped out at our highest level.
Very good with that Greek name. Thank you, Christina. You're the
hopefully
best.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So big thanks to all the new Patreon support. And if we go back into the vault, this week we selected Robert Sabo.
Hey, Sabo.
So thank you, Robert. Been with us a long time. And big thanks to all the people that continue to support us month after month. We had some PayPal support. Louise Valmoria.
Valmore.
Cynthia Bonafine.
Hey, Bonafine.
Lance Erickson.
What's going on, Lance?
And Lena Karsten.
Hey, Lena.
So thank all of you as well.
Yeah.
Gibbs, right now we have a brand new episode out on True Crime All the Time Unsolved. We're talking about the murder of Christine Prince.
Yeah, 1982 up in Toronto.
So we're heading north of the border.
Yeah, for cases we can get across the border. I know the border's closed to everything else, but for cases, we can actually cross over.
So. Well, yeah, the research is not...
restricted.
Not restricted, but the physical, you know, like I like to fly you into the location.
Right.
I like to have you walk around. Exactly. And we just haven't been able to do that.
It's been disappointing.
But definitely check that episode out. We're working on a new Patreon-only episode. It will either be out next week or the week after. I haven't decided yet, but I'll keep everybody updated. All right, buddy. Are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time?
I am.
We're talking about Daniel Rometta, who in 1985 went on about a three-week crime spree that spanned multiple states. And over just 6 days of that time, he murdered five people. But Daniel was not a lone killer. He had a couple of teenage accomplices with him. One was his girlfriend. So to me, there's a little bit of a natural born killers type vibe with this story.
It was a good movie.
Not all the way around. Do you remember the hubbub about that movie though, when it came out? I mean, for the time, it was really seen as just unbelievably graphic.
Yeah.
And maybe it still is today, although we have a lot of graphic movies.
Yeah, I don't know if it would be today like it was, but back then, man, it pushed the envelope.
Yeah, I think it ripped it open.
Yeah.
And then tried to lick it back shut and couldn't do it. It's a very interesting movie. I mean, Oliver Stone to me is a director that likes to push boundaries anyway. Daniel Eugene Rometta was born on January 6, 1958 in Traverse City, Michigan, and he had what sounds like a pretty tough childhood. Both of his parents were reported to be pretty severe alcoholics. Daniel was one of five children, and the family had very little money. Not easy, right? Growing up in those circumstances. But like you and I say, how many people have grown up in similar circumstances,
right, or worse,
and have come out the other side, conquered it, overcome it, whatever you want to call it, and you know, have gone on to lead amazing lives.
Many,
many, many more than have become killers, right?
Well, yeah.
We dwell on killers' backgrounds for a reason, but I do think sometimes people kind of take it the wrong way. You know, I want to make sure that everyone knows, hey, we get it. There's a lot of people that really have bad childhoods. They just figure out how to, you know, overcome it and become a success, you know, in spite of their childhood. But not Daniel, right? We know that's not going to be the case. Pretty early in life, he turned to crime. He began stealing other kids' bicycles. He robbed stores. He shoplifted. You know, pretty much anything he could do to get some money or items that he wanted, he did. He didn't seem to be concerned too much about the consequences because he was caught a bunch of times as a juvenile and arrested. He was sent to reform school for truancy and I think some of the other things that he was doing. But again, too, like yourself, that's not the end of the world.
Never the end of the world.
I know you persevered through your reform school days and came out the other side.
It was interesting.
I think that's a good euphemism to use. People will know what you're getting at.
Yeah.
But unlike you, Daniel dropped out of school in the ninth grade. Daniel's mother later told papers that she was told early on he needed professional help. Okay, so you're coming out to a newspaper and saying, yes, I was told as a child, Daniel needed some help. You know what wasn't in any of the articles that I found?
What kind of help that was given?
Yeah, that he got any type of help as a teenager and then into adulthood. Daniel seemed as though he was always getting into trouble. You know, this was just a kid that constantly was breaking the law. He spent most of his young adult life in prison. He did a stint for auto theft. Then in September of 1984, he was released from prison after serving 3.5 years on a larceny charge.
Just a little bit of larceny.
Do you mean larceny?
Why can't I get that out?
I don't know. But I'm leaving it in.
Like, what? I'm leaving it in there. Why won't it come out of my mouth?
Hey, sometimes it just won't.
It won't.
But I knew what you meant. I think everybody knows what you meant. But when you talk about the background of a subject, right, of one of our cases, there's not a lot here. Well, there's a reason for that. This kid spent a lot of time locked up. You know, most of his late teenage, young adult years were spent in prison or jail or reform school or whatever. But he's out in 1984. He's 27 years old. He has a record. And you would have to say, Gibbs, to this point, he's not contributed to society in any meaningful way.
Oh, yeah. There's no way he has.
The guy's done nothing with his life in the first 27 years. Unfortunately, he's not going to do anything for the rest of his life either. Daniel met an 18-year-old named Lisa Dunn at a party in December 1984. So he's only been out of prison for about 3 months, goes to a party, meets a girl 9 years his junior. The two quickly became an item. And by January, within a month, they were living in a Traverse City motel together.
I always kind of remember Traverse City as the place where you went to do all the outdoor fun stuff, the snowmobiling and the...
I think so. I have never actually been, but when I lived in Detroit, it seemed like I always saw signs for Traverse City, do this. You know, like there were activities to do there. So I think you may be right. I don't know that Daniel Rometta was doing, you know, any skiing or luge or anything like that.
The luge.
But think about that, right? Gets out of prison in September. By December, he's got a girlfriend. By January, they're living together in a motel. Daniel Rometta's not working.
No. So how's that working out for him?
Well, actually, for him, I guess you would say it's working out pretty good because Lisa Dunn, at 18 years old, is a waitress. She's paying for everything.
It's not easy, man.
And the thing about Lisa Dunn is that, you know, it was said that she was a pretty good student. Now, she started to get a little wild junior, senior year in high school, as many of us did, right? I think if a lot of us were honest with ourselves, junior, senior year is probably when we started to explore, get a little, you know, let our freak flag fly a little.
Yeah, you sure did.
I know you let yours fly and it actually flew away.
It did. Still trying to chase it down.
But I think the important thing about Lisa for me was, even though she was doing things that probably a lot of us did, she kept her grades up pretty high.
Yeah, she was a good student. So yeah,
pretty good kid by all accounts. I'm not really sure, Gibbs, where the attraction came from, right? On the part of Lisa Dunn for Daniel Rometta.
Maybe it was just a little bit of that bad boy, you know, some people like that bad boy look.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why they like the Gibster. They see you as a bad boy.
Yeah.
I don't know what else it could have been. I mean, when we post pictures of this guy, you know, he's not Brad Pitt.
No.
He's not what I would consider to be a looker. He's got a felony record. He doesn't have a job. So other than being the George Costanza bad boy, I don't know what else it would be.
Yeah, maybe he's just a good smooth talker.
Well, that could be too. There were reports that he was abusive to Lisa during their relationship. And this isn't a relationship that's going to last very long. That's the one thing about this case is it all takes place in a very short amount of time. From the time that Daniel gets out of prison to the time that he begins and ends his killing spree,
right,
not a lot of time goes by. So add that on top of it. He's abusive. It's really kind of hard to see why she would have been attracted to him. Obviously, there's something that was there that we don't know about. Then on January 25th, 1985, Daniel was arrested for destruction of property. And I really believe this was the catalyst for everything that was to come, because his arraignment was scheduled for the 28th of that month. I don't think Daniel Rometta had any intentions of going to that arraignment. Gibbs, he probably knew, given his record, that the outcome was not going to be good for him.
No, if he didn't enjoy prison the last time, he's not going to enjoy it the second time.
Or the third.
Or the third.
Because he'd already done two.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
He'd already done two prison stints, so.
Yeah, he does not want to go back.
And when you go in already having some jail time and two prison stints on your record,
yeah,
they're going to throw the book at you, right? If they look at your record and say, you're incorrigible.
Yeah.
We're going to give you whatever the max would be for that.
Kind of like the three strikes and out kind of a deal, really.
Yeah, maybe something like that.
But he could also, you know, on his last day out, maybe got a little mouthy with some people because he thought, I'm never coming back. He said a few things like some people do when they leave. Mm-hmm. You know, they let their mouth run a little bit because they think they won't ever be back.
And then, talk big and bad because yeah. You know you're not going to have to face those people.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, the prospect of going back there becomes even more haunting.
Well, yeah.
If you did run your mouth.
You got to answer for those now.
So a plan was made, and it was for them to leave town. It would be Daniel Rometta, his girlfriend, Lisa Dunn, and an 18-year-old friend named Mark Walter. So on the 27th, the day before his arraignment was scheduled, Daniel robbed a Michigan convenience store using a 357 that Lisa had stolen from her father. And there's a lot out there about this 357. I think the consensus is that Lisa stole it from her father, either gave it to Daniel or Daniel took it from her. There are some stories that she was sexually assaulted and she felt as though she needed to carry this gun. I don't know what's true and what's not true because there are a number of different accounts. I think what we know for sure is that there's a 357.
Yeah.
And it most likely got into the hands of Rometta by way of Lisa Dunn. Daniel threatened the clerk, 26-year-old Kathy Dinger, with the gun. He threatened to blow her head off. He made her lie face down in the back of the store, cleaned out the register of about $300 and left. But he didn't kill her. He didn't hurt her. It was a robbery. I'm sure she was shaken, scared. She's probably going to be more scared, Gibbs, when she finds out what happens to people later in this very same scenario. Now, after the robbery, the three headed to Florida. And they arrived sometime around the 1st of February. So again, I don't think he had any intentions of ever going to this arraignment. We're skipping town. We're going to Florida.
I mean, that's what you do, right? You get arrested. They say, hey, you have an arraignment coming up. What are you going to do? And they go, we're going to go to Disney World.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because there are some reports that they may have gone to Disney World after getting to Florida. I mean, I don't think that's the commercial that Disney wants to make.
No.
You've just been bailed out of jail. Where are you going to go? I'm going to Disney World.
That's right. Disney World.
You're not going to see that commercial.
No.
But Daniel Rometta committed his first murder on February 8th. This was at a convenience store in Ocala, Florida. Working inside the convenience store that day was 60-year-old Chet Reeder. Rometta walked in, shot Reeder four times at close range, and emptied the cash register. Gibbs, they walked away with a whopping $52.
$52. He took a man's life. Wow. And he didn't hesitate.
No.
Which is so strange.
Yeah, and I think we'll see kind of a pattern as we go through this episode. I believe that Rometta figured it out pretty quickly that he was willing to kill, and probably because he realized that he couldn't leave any witnesses. He didn't want to get caught, obviously. Right. And he thought by eliminating witnesses, that would be his best chance. Because he didn't need to kill this convenience store clerk, right? This is a 60-year-old man. My assumption is that if he had a gun in his face, he would have opened the register.
Sure.
Given whatever money was in there, they flee. This man never needs to lose his life. Kathy Dinger didn't lose her life, and they got away with the money.
And I'm sure the protocol is if you get robbed, open the cash register, let them take what they want.
Yeah, it's pretty much universal, right? Yeah. If you work in any type of job where money's involved,
yeah.
If somebody walks in and they put a gun in your face, you give them whatever they want.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll leave and, you know, things are insured. Nobody loses their life. That's usually every company's policy.
Right.
So using that logic, why did Daniel Rometta kill this 60-year-old man? Either A, because he wanted to and he liked to, or B, because he thought he had to eliminate witnesses.
Well, I think
you're right. Or a combination of both.
I think you're right. It's probably, you know, the fact that he doesn't need to eliminate witnesses. Why else would you go in just firing right off the get-go? Because you already knew before you walked in, this is what I have to do here and every place forward.
Now, the one thing that I struggled with in this whole case, you know, I don't know if this group had a definite plan other than Rometta getting away from Michigan. But, you know, there's no doubt they're going to kill a number of people along the way. And every one of these are just extremely senseless murders. Like we just talked about, this murder of Chet Reeder did not have to happen. 2 days later, on February 10th, Rometta, Dunn, and Walter walked into a gas station in Wascom, Texas. Gibbs, this is a very small town, less than 2,000 people. Inside the gas station, teenager Camelia Carroll was working alone. At gunpoint, Carroll gave the group around $300 in cash from the register. But again, they don't just walk out. They abduct Carroll, put her in their car. They drive a little bit down an isolated road, and then they stop. Daniel pulled her out of the car, and he told her to start walking, assuring her that they're going to let her go. They're not going to hurt her. And then all of a sudden, he told her to start running.
Yeah.
Now, you want to talk about scary. You know, just think about what's going on in this young teenager's mind.
Sure, man.
So she does what she was told. She starts running.
Right.
And as she's running, Rometta shot her 5 times, and then they left her for dead. Right? The three piled back into the car, and they left.
So not only all this other stuff he's doing, he's also a coward, right? Because he told her that, oh, we're going to let you go. Then tells her, oh, you better run. As she's running, he shoots her in the back.
Yeah, so now you've gone from, you know, just a senseless murder to now it seems like it's almost sport.
Yeah, you're playing a game.
Like hunting human type sport.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about Camelia was she was strong.
Yeah.
She fought for her life. She was able to crawl up the hill and make it to the road and flag down a passing car. A couple in their car stopped. They helped her and they took her to a nearby hospital where doctors saved her life.
Which is good for her.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, it's amazing. I probably won't talk a lot about this at trial, but it's not going to be hard. Right. Eventually, for the authorities to match up all these killings.
Right.
They were able to pull slugs from her. She survived. Obviously, they pulled them out. They were able to pull slugs from Chet. And these are all going to match. And so ballistically, this is going to be a pretty easy case. But that's down the road, obviously.
But again, just to me, it shows how big of a coward he really is.
Plus, you know, how amazing what this teenager was able to do really was, right? You get shot 5 times. I think she was like 18 or 19 years old, Gibbs. And you could lay down and say, I'm hurt too badly. I give up. But she didn't. She wanted to live and she fought.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, I don't know what the word is, inspiring. It's just amazing what people can do in certain circumstances.
She definitely was tough.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. Well, and I mentioned ballistics, right? But here you're going to have a person who lives that can easily identify all these people. So again, when I say we're probably not going to dive into all of the specifics of the trials, this is why.
You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust Simply Safe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. Simply Safe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try Simply Safe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. Simply Safe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/TCAT. That's simplysafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like Simply Safe. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily, Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.
But the very next day, the group is in Dyer, Arkansas, where they shot 42-year-old drive-in clerk Linda Marvin 11 times, killing her. So apparently the three pretended to buy something. And then as soon as Linda opened the cash drawer, they shot her. And they got away with about $500 in cash. They fled the store, and they made their way to Kansas. But to me, this is where the story starts to get really strange. Because along the way, they picked up a 33-year-old hitchhiker named James Hunter. Hunter was reportedly hitchhiking from Texas back to his home in Amarette, Missouri. I think he had gone to Texas to look for work, didn't find exactly what he was looking for, so he was trying to make his way back to Missouri. Now, you and I have talked a lot about the dangers of hitchhiking.
Oh, yeah.
Many times, right? We've talked about that. Now, normally it's because the person that picks you up intends to do you harm, or may intend to do you harm.
Right.
I don't think we've ever encountered a situation where a hitchhiker stumbled into, you know, kind of unknowingly something like this situation. These people weren't looking to hurt him or sexually abuse him or anything like that. But I'm sure when he got in the car, he wasn't thinking, oh, these are murderers on the run from the law.
No.
But there's no doubt James Hunter's going to be in for, you know, kind of a bumpy ride, because that is what he stumbled into.
wonder how that conversation went. You know, you're driving down the road, just got picked up. Yeah, where are you from, buddy? Where you had it? Yeah, we're on the run.
Yeah, my assumption is, and obviously we don't have all the details around it, but I'm assuming that that wasn't the first thing that was discussed. Now, he's going to find out very quickly, because it's not long after they pick him up that the four of them walked into a Stuckey's restaurant near Grainfield, Kansas, and Daniel Rometta shot the manager, 27-year-old Larry McFarlane, and then all four walked out of the restaurant with about $170 in cash. And all the reports that I read, Gibbs, have this manager, Larry McFarlane, working alone in the Stuckey's, which I kind of found odd. Stuckey's doesn't seem to be the type of restaurant that would normally be manned by just one person.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so either. It's a pretty popular roadside kind of an eatery.
But it's not like a little one-man shack type operation.
No, you would think you'd have, maybe three or four people in there.
Yeah, I mean, cook, manager, waitresses, that's kind of what I was thinking. But what do I know? I've never worked at a Stuckey's. Maybe there was some type of emergency. Maybe somebody called off and then somebody had to leave.
A Stuckey's would never take you as an employee.
Never. Anyway. Never. I would never pass the background check. But right after this murder occurred, a customer walked in. And it was as these four individuals were leaving in their car, the customer found Larry McFarlane dead, but they also got a look at the car. And so they were able to call the authorities, say, number one, you need to get out here because, you know, somebody's been shot. But number two, here's the people that just left and here's the make and model of their car. So all that information went out over the radio. Thomas County Undersheriff Ben Albright was driving around in his car, and he saw a car that matched the description speeding down Interstate 70. So he tried to pull this car over, and that's when all hell broke loose because someone from the car started shooting at Albright, and he was hit twice. Then everyone got back into the car and they sped off.
Well, you know, Rometta's not going to go down easy.
No, because he has no reason to give up, right? He's going to fight to the end.
Yeah, because now, I mean, if he gets caught, his situation is about as extreme as you can be at this point.
Yeah. It's much more extreme than it was when he was in Michigan facing arraignment on destruction of property charges. Yeah. Now he's a murderer.
Yeah.
So he's past the point of no return exactly. In his mind. But Albright was able to get back to his car, get on the police radio, and tell his fellow officers which direction the car was headed. Now, the question of who shot Albright would be debated. Albright would later say it was James Hunter, the hitchhiker, that shot him.
Yeah.
At trial, it was argued that it was Rometta who shot Albright. Hunter did have a gun, but later said that he was trying to shoot Rometta because he didn't like what was going on. The problem is the gun accidentally went off and he shot Lisa Dunn in the leg. So again, Gibbs, you have a hitchhiker, James Hunter, who in the span of probably less than an hour, has been involved in the murder of a restaurant manager.
Yeah.
And the shooting of a sheriff.
And shooting somebody in their own group in the lake.
Yeah. Accidentally.
Yeah. So, I mean.
That's a pretty eventful hour.
That's a ride you want to get off as soon as you can. Like, I got to get out of here. Thank you. I'm at my stop now.
Yes. And I think according to Hunter, if you believe him.
Right.
His thought was, yes, I got to get out of here. The only way for me to get out of here is to shoot Daniel Rometta.
Yeah.
Because, and some more of this will come out, reasons why it will come out later. So the four are driving in the car, they get off the interstate, and they pull into the lot of a grain elevator. This is a very small community of Levant, Kansas. Basically, Rometta is looking to ditch the car that they've been driving, and he spots a pickup truck in the parking lot of this, where this grain elevator is. There's two guys there. One of them is the owner of the pickup truck, and he forced both of these workers, 29-year-old Rick Schroeder and 55-year-old Glenn Moore, into the cab of the truck. But he also saw that there was a trailer, you know, kind of one of those trailers that serves as an office,
right,
for construction sites and little, you know, little things. And he noticed that there was someone inside moving around.
Couldn't just leave it be, could he?
No, no, because again, I think he was at the point where he felt that he could leave no witnesses.
Right.
So he and Hunter busted into the trailer. Now, again, James Hunter is the hitchhiker. So all of this is strange.
Yeah, because you would think at that point, Hunter would have another chance to take him out, if that's really what he wanted to do.
But he's going along. His argument is going to be he thought Remeda was going to kill him. Now, that could be a valid argument. We'll have to wait and see. But they bust into this trailer, and Daniel shot the manager, Maurice Christie. The pair went back out. They got into the truck, left Christie for dead. But he didn't die, because apparently there was another employee in the trailer that Daniel and Hunter didn't see. This guy was hiding, and he was able to, you know, call police. So if you think about it, you have six people in this truck. And at some point, Remeda made the decision that, all right, he doesn't need these guys as hostages, and he can't have them as witnesses. So they stopped the truck. He forced the pair out and ordered them to lay on the ground. Then he proceeded to shoot both of them in the back of the head.
Brutal.
Very brutal. But the authorities had already been alerted, and they were after the group. They actually found these two men dead not long after they were shot. So they weren't very far behind. So following the group was a Kansas Highway Patrol trooper named Mark Conboy, followed by two Colby police cars. And everything came to a head when the group in the pickup truck spotted a roadblock in front of them. So they turned off the road and they pulled into this abandoned farmhouse. The occupants in the pickup truck got out, as did the authorities who had pulled up behind them, and bullets started flying.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a shootout.
Wild Wild West shootout, man.
Yeah. 18-year-old Mark Walter, who we've really not talked much about, right? He's been with the group this entire time.
Right.
He started firing at Mark Conboy.
There's a mistake.
That's not good. Conboy was firing back. One of the Colby police officers had a shotgun. The other had a semi-automatic rifle. And the guy that had the rifle aimed it at Mark Walter. When Walter turned toward the police officers with his gun, the man with the rifle shot him directly in the forehead, killing him instantly.
Yeah. Well, when you're in a shootout
and you point a gun at a police officer with a rifle,
it's going to happen.
More than likely, you're going to get shot.
Yeah.
Both Daniel Remeda and Lisa Dunn were hit during the shootout. And at one point, they just stopped firing and they laid down on the ground. And it was reported that as the officers closed in on them, they began professing their love for each other.
I love you, baby.
Yeah.
I love you too, baby. You know?
A little kind of like Pulp Fiction-y or something.
Yeah.
But the reason why I think it's important is because of everything that does come out later at some of the trials. The three surviving members of the group were arrested, including James Hunter. Again, the hitchhiker, but who was holding a gun?
Yeah.
When officers approached him.
I mean, his gun should have been on the ground from the get-go.
Yeah.
And he should have been laying on the ground with his, you know, hands over his head.
And I don't know. There wasn't a lot of information other than about Mark Walter, because he was killed. But you know, the other three, how many shots they fired, if Lisa fired any shots, yeah, if James fired any shots. I didn't really see that information, but he definitely had a gun in his hand. And apparently he told the police, hey, man, I'm just a hitchhiker. I don't even know these people. You know, they just picked me up and, you know, I'm not involved in all this. Which, you know, depending on how you look at it, could either be true. There's some truth to it for sure. What role he actually played is going to be very hotly debated.
Sure. I mean, he's got that other officer that was shot.
He walked into the Stuckey's restaurant
mm-hmm.
when the manager was killed.
Yeah.
He's holding a gun during the police shootout, you know? Daniel Rometta, Lisa Dunn, and James Hunter were all charged with the same offenses. 2 counts of first-degree murder, 2 counts of aggravated battery, 2 counts of aggravated kidnapping, and 1 count of aggravated robbery. Their bonds were set at $5 million. So obviously the judge felt as though they were a serious flight risk.
Well, no doubt. If he had a chance to do it again, he was going to fly.
Yeah, if he's going to run on a destruction of property charge, he's sure as hell going to run when he's facing multiple murder counts Absolutely. And, you know, things that are going to net him a life sentence or multiple life sentences.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to run the first chance he got.
He'd be out of there.
This guy was kind of a character, Gibbs. He had a lot to say while he was sitting in jail. He told reporters that he was responsible for everything. He's like, yeah, I did all that. But he also told them that he wanted to be executed. You know, not something that you hear from a lot of people sitting in jail. Number one, yeah, I did everything. I did right. everything I've been charged with. And number two, I'd like to get the death sentence.
He really just didn't want to go back to prison, did he?
He really didn't. And he did make statements later on that said, saying that he didn't want to die in prison. Like, he didn't want to spend all those years just kind of
rotting away,
existing, and then die in prison. Because he's still a pretty young guy, right? 27, 28 years old. But I think it shocked everyone, Gibbs, including his attorney, when at a routine hearing in May of 1985, this is just a couple months, right, after they were arrested, Daniel Rometta pleaded guilty to all charges. Now, Kansas didn't have the death penalty, so Daniel was later given 5 life sentences.
But if he wanted to be killed, right? If he wanted the death penalty, why didn't he just stay standing up and point the gun at the cops during the shootout and allowed them to shoot and kill them right then? You know, I don't know.
It's a very valid question to, you know, death by cop, yeah. right, is what people would call it. Maybe he wasn't thinking about it at the time, or, and we may find this out, maybe he didn't really want to die.
Yeah, I think he was a big talker. But, I mean, if he wanted to die, why not do suicide by cop or death by cop?
But you know that the other states were going to come after him. You know, and some of the things that he told papers after he was sentenced was that he wanted to get these charges out of the way so that he could get to one of the states where he could be given the death penalty. Again, kind of going along with this, I don't want to rot in prison. I want to die. Lisa Dunn and James Hunter went on trial in June of that year. That's the other thing that kind of jumped out at me. All of this happened very quickly. Now, their attorneys painted them both as victims of Daniel Rometta. Ben Albright, the state trooper, testified that he believed it was James Hunter that shot him, but Rometta, Dunn, and Hunter told a very different story. Lisa Dunn and James Hunter said that they were both terrified of Daniel Rometta. They wanted to leave, but felt that they couldn't because they feared that Daniel would kill them. Believable? Possibly.
Yeah, but I really feel like for Hunter, he had several opportunities to walk away or run away.
Yeah, I think there are people that will look at it that way. There will probably also be people that will look at it as, okay, maybe he did, but he was so scared that something would go wrong that Daniel would kill him. Because that's his stance.
Yeah, but he did have a gun on him as well.
He did, and he tried to use it, and it kind of backfired. He ended up shooting Lisa with it
right
instead of Daniel. Now, Dunn said that she was the victim of verbal, physical, and sexual abuse at the hands of Daniel Rometta. She testified that he once put a loaded gun in her mouth and threatened to blow her head off.
He probably did.
And Hunter testified that Rometta had threatened him repeatedly while in the car, at one point telling him he had killed a number of people, including one hitchhiker already. So, you know, all of this testimony from them kind of backing up the point that they're making, hey, we were scared. There was nothing else we could do. We couldn't get away from this guy. We were just too fearful.
But also it was a little bit conflicting, right? Because when they get arrested, Lisa's laying on the ground, looking at him.
Saying, I love you.
I love you. You know, professing. You know, I mean, that's the opportunity for her to say, screw you, buddy. You're a piece of whatever, blah, blah, blah. You know, start saying thanks to the police officer for, you know, saving me.
And that's why, you know, this is a case where I think people can look at certain things a couple of different ways. Now, Rometta did take the stand in their trial, and he basically took credit for all of it. He said he committed all of the abductions and murders, and that it was him that shot Albright, not Hunter. And he admitted that he had threatened Lisa Dunn every day they were together. He also admitted that he threatened James Hunter as well. And he backed up the story that Hunter accidentally shot Lisa Dunn and never shot at Albright. So here you have this guy that is saying, yeah, I did all the bad stuff that you've thought I did. So there's no way that you can convict, you know, these kids because it was me.
And I can see, you know, where the day in and day out terror from him onto Lisa could get in her head, right?
Yeah, she's 18 years old.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that.
Exactly. Fact. But I still find it weird when you're laying on the ground that you, you know, profess your love. But then again,
it does happen.
It happens.
Some people get that Stockholm syndrome. Yeah. You just never know. There are parts of this story that are hard to completely figure out, right? What's real, what's not, what is said to try to save your own ass. I mean, some of it's hard. But when you have the killer, Rometta, kind of backing up everyone's story, you would think, all right, the jury's probably going to believe him. Now, the prosecutor told the jury that Dunn and Hunter were just as guilty as Daniel Rometta because they aided him in the crimes. And Gibbs, it turned out that that's exactly how the jury saw it. After 12 hours of deliberations, the jury found both Dunn and Hunter guilty on all charges. They were each later given 4 life sentences. So I just want to reiterate, you're a hitchhiker.
Yeah.
You get picked up by these people. You spend what amounts to a few hours with them. And the next thing you know, you've got 4 life sentences.
But again, could he have walked away at any moment and not be involved?
I think the way that you're seeing it is most likely the way that the jury saw it, right? Obviously, because they convicted him.
Sure.
But these guilty verdicts, they would be appealed by both of their lawyers. But you know how long the appeal process takes.
Oh, yeah.
It takes a while. Yeah. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning
learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up.
It wasn't until 1987 that the Kansas Supreme Court overturned Hunter's conviction. He was tried again in 1988, and this time a jury acquitted him of all charges. So here's a guy that went from having four life sentences to being found not guilty.
Now you're a free man, you can go.
Unfortunately, 4 days after the acquittal, James Hunter died of a heart attack at the age of 36. Lisa Dunn didn't get a new trial until 1992, but she too was acquitted by a new jury. Now, there was a lot in, you know, some of the research about the fact that the new trials that both Lisa and James got were in different locales. So the thought was, we're able to move these trials away from where the crimes happened. And many people thought that's why they had a better chance the second time around.
Yeah.
The problem that Lisa had was that Arkansas was waiting in the wings to charge her with the death of Linda Marvin. So she was extradited to Arkansas to face those murder charges. She ultimately struck a deal where she pleaded guilty to a charge of hindering the arrest of Daniel Rometta. She was given a sentence of 20 years.
Not a light sentence.
It's not a light sentence. She got credit for the 8 years that she had already served, and they suspended the rest of the sentence. So she was technically free, not quite free, but she was able to go back home to Michigan and start her life over.
So it was on her record, basically.
Yeah, the conviction for hindering arrest, I guess, but not for the murders.
No, but I'm sure she took some pretty good hits through the media for a while.
Oh, there's no doubt. And let's not forget, she served 8 years. And if you think about it, you get a 20-year sentence. She most likely probably would have been paroled after 8 years anyway.
Yeah.
Give or take.
Yeah. Roughly around that number.
So you could say she served her time.
Yeah, you could.
But now we have to get back to Daniel. You know, I said that Florida and Arkansas were going to come after him, and they did. Florida got their hands on him first. In 1986, a Florida jury found Rometta guilty for the murder of 60-year-old Chet Reeder, and he was sentenced to death. Then he went on trial in Arkansas and was found guilty for the murder of Linda Marvin. A judge followed the jury's suggestion there and sentenced him to death again. Daniel wrote the judge a note that said, "Your Honor, to procrastinate this execution would also be quite difficult to comprehend. I'm prepared to accept the punishment, which would save the taxpayers and the courts years of problems." So again, he's basically saying, okay, you gave me the death sentence, now carry it out.
Yeah, just get this over with now.
The thing is, everybody knows with capital punishment, it doesn't work that way. Right. At one point, both Arkansas and Florida had scheduled execution dates for this guy. And you see it all the time, right? After a guilty verdict and a sentence of death, there will be a scheduled execution date like months later. It just never happens because of all the appeals and everything that,
right,
you know, come along with a capital punishment. There was also some fighting between the states of Kansas, Arkansas, and Florida. I mentioned it. Kansas didn't have the death penalty, and they wanted Remeda to finish out his life sentences in Kansas. Now, obviously, both Arkansas and Florida wanted to execute him. Now, in the beginning, Remeda seemed very eager to be put to death. I've kind of already mentioned it a little bit. He gave interviews saying he wasn't afraid of death. In fact, he was ready for it. When reporters asked him why he committed his murders, he said, "You know what? I just like to kill people." He also tried to drop all of his appeals, but Gibbs, something changed as the years went by, as it often does, right? With some of these people, as they get closer and closer to death, their thinking tends to change a little bit.
Yeah. This prison life's not that bad.
Well, I think it's easy when you're young to say, yeah, go ahead and kill me.
Right.
When you know it's not going to happen right away. Yeah, some years tick by and then you think, okay, they could actually do this. A lot of people start to change their way of thinking. Now, he also got married in prison. That could have had something to do with it.
Could have.
He began asking his attorneys to find ways to appeal his death sentence. He also started to change his tune, saying that it was actually Lisa Dunn who had directed all of the killing. He started telling reporters from death row that he hadn't killed anyone.
So now he's just fabricating lies.
He said, you know what? I only confessed to the murders to save Lisa. But none of this worked. His execution date was set for March 31st, 1998 in Florida's electric chair. And that's the day that it was carried out. One article said, Gibbs, he was the fourth person executed in 9 days in Florida.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot.
It's a busy 2 weeks there.
Now, I think some of that frequency had to do with the fact that Florida had temporarily stopped using the electric chair. Because I guess the year before, they had an execution.
Yeah.
And flame shot out the top of this guy's head.
Man, that's like the Green Mile show or whatever.
Yeah. So during the electrocution, like literally flames flying out of the cap or the hood or whatever. So what you had was the cruel and unusual punishment question, and it worked its way through the courts. It was ultimately ruled that it was not cruel and unusual punishment. So I'm thinking that after the ruling, the state was trying to make up for that period of time where they weren't able to carry out executions, but still, 4 and 9 days is a lot.
Yeah.
To me, that's just a lot on the mental health of the people that have to carry this stuff out.
Yeah, it really is.
To put four people to death in 9 days and all of the work that goes into it and kind of the, you know, what does it do to your psyche to be the person that
the executioner
pulls the lever and
it'd be rough.
So when it comes to last meals, I read that his last meal consisted of 2 44-ounce ices.
I love ices.
I love ices too.
Coke ices are my favorite.
I'm more of a blueberry.
You look like you'd be a cherry blueberry guy. Yeah. Yeah. What are you, 12?
Sometimes. Now that's a new one, right? We've never talked about anybody that just had two big ices for their last meal. I don't know. Maybe he was trying to fill up his bladder for one big last FU.
Yeah. Big cleanup on aisle right here. Yeah.
I don't know. Or maybe the guy just liked ices.
They're good, man.
They're good, but is that the last thing that you want?
No, I would want it with.
Right.
You know, to
get a steak, get this, get that, and then wash it down with some icing.
Exactly.
But that's 88 ounces of liquid.
That's
That liquid's going to go somewhere.
I'm just saying, the other day, yesterday, I got one of those big smoothies from Tropical Smoothie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've seen, they're huge, man.
Yeah.
They're like twice that size. Man, I think
this is good pod because you're pointing at something that's on the desk.
Yeah, exactly. That nobody can see. Yeah.
That nobody can see.
Yeah. But after drinking that thing, man, your bladder needs to be empty many times.
Now imagine a whole bunch of volts going through your body.
Oh, man.
Seemed like some bad things are going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Daniel didn't say anything before he was executed, and he reportedly showed no emotion. His religious advisor did read a statement that Daniel had written. It said, "For past actions and events, there is genuine remorse and even greater sorrow that none of it can be undone. I would give 1,000 lifetimes to undo past deeds. The enormity of my errors has been no light burden. If this death brings comfort to the friends and families of those harmed and initiates real healing, justice is truly served. Tell my story to every youth so that the worst of my life will not be repeated by them, and the trust and honesty I learned too late will save others." I guess, Gibbs, as far as last statements go, it's pretty good.
It's not bad. Wonder who helped him write it.
Yeah, I think it would have been better if he would have said he was sorry for what he had done directly, if he would apologize to the families, I mean, verbally.
Right.
But I'm not sure that it would have mattered to the families, to be honest with you. Most of the quotes that I read from family members were along the lines of, you know what? They didn't care what this guy had to say. They didn't really believe anything that came from him, whether it was verbal or in written form. And I get that. You know, if you've taken away a loved one from me, I'm probably not going to be real interested in anything you have to say.
There have been a few good last statements over the time we started doing these pods.
There have been, and I'll be honest with you, there are some that I believe.
Yeah.
And there are many that I do not.
Yeah, I would say a very small portion, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But
there are some people that I truly do believe have changed.
Yeah.
While they were in prison before they were executed, and they're truly sorry for what they did. And if they could take it back, they would. Obviously they can't. I don't know if Daniel's one of those people. It sounds like it, if you just take the words that he wrote at face value.
Right.
But
and that could have been driven a little bit by his new wife.
It could have been, or he really could have grown up, changed his way of thinking. I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, who really knows other than him?
Exactly. That's it right there.
But he was strapped into the oak chair known as Old Sparky. They lowered the hood down over his head, and the executioner, wearing a black hood of his own, turned on the power.
The executioner even had his own hood.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of scary, man, the old black hood.
But kind of necessary, right? If you're the guy that is pulling the lever or turning the power, however the power is turned on.
Yeah.
Do you really want everybody to see your face?
Probably not.
Do you want people seeing you at the grocery store, pushing your cart, getting your Fruit Loops, and they go, "Oh, yeah, there's that guy. He's the guy that kills everybody over at the state prison."
Keep him away from the light switches.
I mean, I think for the purposes of anonymity, I would want a hood as well.
Yeah. You know, you think, why didn't you just go ahead and wire that to the room right behind it? Just put it right
this where nobody can see.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know?
But I go back to, you know, what I was talking about before. What does that do mentally to a person? That takes a special kind of person, right? To be able to do that.
Oh, I would think so. Yeah. Yeah.
You got to go home and sleep at night and be okay with the fact that your job is to hit the switch that ultimately takes someone's life.
Yeah. I mean, you're no different than the guy that's pulling the trigger during a firing squad. No different than the medical person doing the lethal injection, right? Somebody has to do this.
Yeah, no, they're all doing a job, right? It's part of the execution. But at the end of the day, you're taking someone's life.
Yeah, you got to be able to go home with that and be okay with it. And I mean, I don't think you take that job without knowing that that's how it's going to be. Maybe sometimes it could be a little harder, depending on what they say right before it happens.
Well, that's why I was kind of making a big deal about the 4 times in 9 days.
Yeah.
Okay, if you have to do that once a month or something like that, I get it. You have to do that 4 times in a 9-day period. I think that could eat at you a little bit.
It's going to be a little, you know, hey, honey, how was your day at the office? It's going to be a little difficult to, you know, to reply to those.
Yeah, I don't think that's something you talk about sitting around eating Salisbury steak and mashed potatoes.
No.
You got to find some other topic of conversation.
Exactly.
But the descriptions of people that die in the electric chair, you know, to me, pretty different than those that die by lethal injection. And maybe, you know, probably the big reason why the electric chair is not used hardly, if at all. I don't even know if anybody uses it.
I'd rather be hung.
I'm sure you would. I understood what you were saying. But the descriptions of Remeda,
yeah,
you know, so the power gets turned on, all of a sudden it's like, ooh, arching back, hands balled up into fists. It took about 5 minutes. And then when the power was shut off, he just kind of slumped back down in the chair.
Yeah.
You know, when you hear the descriptions, most of the descriptions of the lethal injection, now some have gone little haywire,
right?
But most of the time it's more of a breathing slows, almost like somebody is falling asleep and they die.
Dead Man Walking, Sean Penn. That's how he died in that movie.
The electric chair to me is just, it's a little more violent, but in the end it's the same.
Yeah. The outcome's the same.
The outcome is the same.
You know, I don't feel too bad for anybody that gets or has had the electric chair because they're sitting there because they did a horrific crime to somebody else.
Yeah. Assuming they did the crime, I'm right with you.
Yeah. I don't assume they were too concerned about the pain that their victims went through.
No, I'm sure they weren't, or they wouldn't have done what they did.
Exactly.
So to me, Gibbs, a lesser known case, but I did find it very fascinating. It had some aspects that, you know, you just don't see a lot.
Very fast moving.
Yeah, I mean, from beginning to end, this case went very quickly.
Yeah.
As far as the chronology and the timeline and all of that, you've got a 27-year-old guy who gets an 18-year-old girl to fall in love with him. Yeah. Maybe they both love each other. I don't know. To the point where she's willing to go with him, knowing that he's supposed to go to this arraignment. I think there are some questions in this case, though. How much did she know about what was ultimately going to happen? Now, he could have just said, hey, I don't want to go to this arraignment. Let's take off. We'll go to Disney World. Not, okay, we're going to kill a bunch of people.
Right.
On the flip side of that, where are you going to get the money to go on the run?
Yeah, you got to finance this run somehow.
So I think the question of what Lisa Dunn knew and when she knew it, that's out there. And then you have this whole interesting aspect of this guy, James Hunter, who was hitchhiking. Now, the guy did have a record. I didn't really talk about it a whole lot. He had been in some trouble with the law before.
Right.
I don't know how much that played into it. You know, my biggest questions with James Hunter are, okay, he gets picked up. Obviously, there's no way he knew who these people were.
Right.
At the time that they picked him up.
Yeah, very random.
Very random. They're driving around. Very quickly, though, he sees Remeda kill the manager of the Stuckey's.
Yeah.
He knows these are bad people. You know, to your point, could he have gotten away? Is he being truthful when he said, you know, he wanted to, but he was too scared? I don't know. There's a lot of questions.
Yeah. And you have to look at the police officer that identified him as the shooter. You would think if someone shot you and you got to look at him, you would know who that person was.
Yeah. There has been some back and forth about Albright because he'd been shot twice.
Right.
So he was in rough shape. James Hunter could have had that .22.
Yeah.
That ultimately discharged into Lisa Dunn's leg. Albright could have seen him with it and just said, okay, that's the guy that
that's
shot.
That's the guy, yeah.
So there's been some conflicting information about that. But again, I think with a lot of cases, it's impossible to know with 100% certainty every detail.
Right.
You can talk about the details that have been reported, and you can go back and forth with pros and cons or what ifs, and you know, and I think that's kind of why oftentimes it's very tough for a jury. I mean, just look at James Hunter. A jury convicted him.
Right.
A judge sentenced him to 4 life sentences. Then he got a new trial. That jury looked at whatever evidence was presented and said, you know what? We find him not guilty.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
One extreme to the other.
It's just part of what I found interesting about this case. But that's it. That's it for the case of Daniel Rometta. We got some voicemails, Gibbs. You want to check those out?
Yes, here.
Hey, Mike and Gibby. My name's Austin. Just calling to tell you how much I love the show. Been listening a lot lately. I'd like to give a suggestion for a case that's actually fairly close to my family. Occurred in 2013 in Yazoo City, Mississippi, and it was actually the murder of my great uncle, my grandpa's brother, Ricky Saxton. And just recently in 2019, his killer was finally convicted. His name's Johnny Mack Brown. Basically, the reason I want to suggest this case is I don't know a lot of the details of the case. It affected my family pretty hard. Essentially, he was a tow truck driver, went out to meet a guy to collect a payment for an impounded vehicle and was murdered on a back road. But there was a lot of circumstantial evidence, a lot of appeals, and the whole case is really based on a witness testimony, from my understanding, where he admitted guilty and was eventually convicted. So wanted to check out possibly, and again, love the show. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that. And we'll definitely look into that case. Yeah. See if there's enough out there for a future episode.
Thanks, Austin.
Hi, I'm Mike and Gibby. This is Aaron again from Sacramento. I had a few suggestions, see if you guys would follow through with it. One of them is for T-Cat Willie, the woodcutter from St. Helena in Napa County, California. He was thought to have maybe been tied to the Zodiac, but he committed totally separate crimes at the same time span. Pretty interesting. And then also Gordon Northcott. He was responsible for the Wineville chicken coop murders in the late 1920s. Very interesting. Case. There's a book by one of his nephew's sons, and they made a movie about it with Angelina Jolie, The Changeling. That's a really good case. And then also the case of Bobby Dunbar from 1912. He was a 5-year-old boy who went missing. They thought that he was eaten by alligators, but then years later, an imposter came, and it turned out that it wasn't him. So a very intriguing case, and mistaken identity. So just a couple of cases that I thought would be cool for the podcast. Anyways, have a good day and keep your own time ticking. Bye, guys.
All right. Thank you very much. That chicken coop murder case is one that we do requested quite a bit. Yeah, I know we'll cover it eventually.
Hey guys, Angie Christie here. I just finished listening to the case about the Dartmouth professors. I'm actually from just across the river in Vermont and lived for a while in New Hampshire close to Aetna. And that was a very, very big deal when it happened. As you can imagine, in an elite college town like Hanover, there was not a lot of crime, and it really shook the neighborhood. I distinctly remember I was probably about 12 at the time, but it was very scary. I also wanted to say that I was recently driving from New Hampshire to Colorado, and you guys kept me company. I made it through all of your Patreon episodes, and I'm probably going to buy Stitcher Premium for my return trip so that I can finish catching up on Unsolved. But I just wanted to say thank you for keeping me entertained as always. I hope that, Gibby, you have a good birthday, and happy belated birthday to Mike. And I hope you guys take care, stay safe, and keep your own time ticking, Mike.
Wow. New Hampshire to Colorado. That's a hell of a drive.
It is, man.
you could really binge on a drive like
that's
that.
That's a lot of podcasting.
That is.
Hi, guys. Okay. I don't know how to say this. I just wanted to let you guys know I love your podcast. And I'm from Denmark, so I really like the one you made about Peter Lundin. And I like the way you tried to pronounce it. You did good. And just wanted to let you know that I've suffered with severe anxiety and depression, and you guys helped me through like a year of that because I listened to your podcast like religiously. So, yeah, that's it. Stay safe and keep your own time ticking. Bye.
All right. Thank you. Glad we can help in any way. Hope you're feeling better. We got to get out there again, Gibbs. We got to do some more Scandinavian cases, Sweden, Denmark. I've got a couple in mind. The problem that I have is the research methods that I use for cases.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of tough when you're trying to look at newspapers that are in a different language.
Well, I'll fly up to Nova Scotia and
Nova Scotia?
Actually, I need to go over to...
I don't know what the hell you're going to do in
Nova Scotia to catch the plane there. Then I'll go over and I'll be over in
Denmark
and Sweden and Norway, all that.
You're not fooling anybody. Everyone knows that you actually thought Nova Scotia was Scandinavian, in Scandinavia.
No.
Everyone knows.
It's the cheapest flights. I go for the cheapest flights every time.
Oh, that's too funny. All right, buddy. We did have some mailbag.
You know,
we haven't had a lot, and then all of a sudden, things just started flying in.
We're good.
So our friend Siobhan from the Boston Coffee Cake Company sent us our yearly goodies, amazing coffee cakes.
Awesome. Thank
you. We appreciate that. Lottie sent me some goodies for my birthday,
including
a book in Danish that she wants me to figure out how to translate.
You want me to read it to you?
Yeah, okay. You'll have to. Bedtime stories. Rick Shilby sent us some real sweet Ontario maple syrup.
Really?
So we got that going for us.
There you go.
And then Bernice Vignes daughter.
Yeah.
Sent us a huge box of goodies from Iceland.
Big box.
The problem is, again, I'm still trying to translate everything to find out what it is. There are cans of liquids that are either orange juice or malt liquor. And I'm deciding between the two.
I'm going to take my phone and put the Google Translate app over it and scan it, and it'll say exactly what's in it.
Okay. Is that how that works?
That's how it works.
Okay. But we appreciate all of that very much. All right, buddy. We got to get out.
All right.
That is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.